Okay, so this is called the afterburn. This is where we take an opportunity for you to ask questions, share thoughts, make comments about the teaching. It's my opportunity to receive those things so I can know whether or not what I said was received the way I had hoped and intended it to be. So if you have comments or questions, kind of line up over here if you're in the room. Otherwise, the Shamash team will take down your questions and read them over the mic when we get shifted over to them. All right, we'll begin with Angela.
Just wanted to clarify something. So we all come in as tares then, and as we walk the walk and we are practicing our fruit, then we become wheat. Is that true?
No, I wouldn't say that wheat and tares are like changeable that way. I'm saying when you come in, you have a giant question mark as to what you are. Now, he already knows what you are because he's already seen the end from the beginning. So he already knows who's a wheat and who's a tare. But he gives you these inspirational understandings as if he reveals this information to you so that you might put in the effort to be a wheat. Okay? Because again, the metaphor there is that wheat and tares look very similar when they're young, when they're new. But when they mature, we get to see what they are. The difference between wheat and tares, the way I would look at it, is that you actually have a choice to make sure that you become the one and not the other, if you want to put in the effort.
So you can become wheat even if you are a tare by putting in the work.
You can manifest that you're wheat. I think that you're growing and you could go either way, as opposed to just, well, you're born and you're a tare and, you know. I don't think he would call you if you couldn't make it, right? We've talked about that. But you could choose as you mature to go towards tare and not towards wheat. Because it's not the literal where you have two literally different things, but they look very similar until they mature. But that the metaphor being, if you're going to try to pluck one out, especially when they're young, you might pluck out the wrong ones, right? But for us, he's telling you, don't end up being a tare. Okay, make choices and decisions to be a wheat. So I don't want to say like, so you're starting out a tare and you change and that kind of thing. I think you start off as an unknown that could go either way. And then you make the choice which way you go. Okay?
Hello.
Amy.
So real quick about the spirit. I thought you were going to refer to Caleb, that kind of spirit.
Well.
A belief. Is it kind of the same?
It is kind of the same. I mean, because, you know, it talked about Joshua and Caleb having a different spirit in them.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when you're talking about John, and he doesn't know yet what will be, but will be like Yeshua, whatever that is. And so sometimes I kind of look at stuff like the golden ratio. You know what the golden ratio is, and things don't exist unless it's being observed. So maybe that's just kind of like a glimpse of what we're dealing with as far as like what he is. Like.
Well, look, again, we're talking about being, you know, four-dimensional, three-dimensional in time creatures who are limited in lifespan, et cetera, trying to understand something that doesn't fit into our physics.
Yeah, it's okay? Like he gave us something to do to keep us busy, but that's kind of like he's beyond what we can really understand.
Right, but he's also limited us in terms of permanence. So if we're a problem, we don't get to exist forever.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so he gives us a time to kind of choose and decide what we're going to be before
I guess
he gives us that.
My point is, all of this only exists for our benefit. So we can't see what's beyond what we can see within the physical.
That's correct.
And then my personal problem is that I'm not a very good self-motivator. I'm more of like what you said, a responder. Like, I know it should be done, but I'm like, I don't want to. But then at the same time, I don't like being told what to do. But I want structure. I love routine. So I'm in this catch-22 kind of quandary type thing. If you could help me with some tools on that.
Well, I mean, look, it's...
Will you wait until I sit down so I can pay attention, please? Thanks.
Why not? I won't start answering until you get to your seat. All right, so... Look, what you're talking about is very common, very normal, okay? Camera's going to wonder, I'm looking over where Amy's sitting. All right, it's very common, it's very normal, the struggle that we have, knowing what we need. Look, children, without consciously being aware of it, know they need discipline, and they need guidance, and they need structure, but they lash out against it. But they don't do very well without it. So we're the same way, just, you know, because we're just bigger versions of that as we get older, where we like our independence, we like our freedoms, but we also realize that we need some sort of authority in our lives to keep us from going off the deep end somewhere, right? Getting off the path and really getting into trouble. And so the way you win that battle in yourself is you have to, and that's kind of what was going on in Colossians here, you have to recognize the instruction is coming from that level of proper authority that you should trust that says you need to find somebody to listen to. I know you don't want to, I know you don't like to, but you need to, okay? And so believing that authority helps you then to come under more of that authority that comes from the one you're believing, right? So that authority helps pass it down. Okay, so let me talk to you parents out there. If dad especially has the respect of the children but mom doesn't, dad, you need to transfer that over to mom and get those children who now trust you and are listening to you to realize they need to listen to mom. Okay, so you have to, again, the vertical passes that authority down. Okay, the father gives it to the son then gave it to his disciples, and then it keeps passing down that way. And so it only works, though, to the level to which you respect the one above. All right, so you need to work on how much do you respect the authority of the above, and then how much the authority of the above wants you to be under a physical authority so you can practice what that looks like. All right, because then you would see the value in that. Almost all of the most successful people out there have coaches, okay, trainers. And those are people that are pretty hard on them to get them to the highest levels they can reach. But the only reason it works is because they trust that the person training them or coaching them is qualified to get them there and can get them there. So a lot of you who still struggle with, you know, my style of leadership, You could do really well if you could really trust that that will still get you there. In other words, that the whole point is to help you get through some of those, well, I don't like to be talked to that way, and I don't like that, and I don't like this, and I don't want, well, maybe that's because that's what you need to finally get through. That's why he put you here. Okay, he could have put somebody else in front of this mic. Because a lot of people complain, well, Rabbi, you know, we'd like your teachings just fine, but if you could just be this way or that way. No, he picked me. The way I am. I mean, he picked me. Not that I would not be growing into his image too, but I'm saying, but he picked me with my style, okay? I mean, when you read the scriptures, John doesn't sound a whole lot like Peter, who doesn't sound necessarily a whole lot like Paul. Their personalities are very different. So you guys were given me to listen to. That's just the way it is. But you have to realize that you probably didn't just randomly end up that way, that you needed to deal with those things. And so instead of kicking and screaming about it, why don't you accept that that's the above me wanted you to deal with this? And then you'd learn something. Good question. All right.
I really enjoyed...
I forgot your first name.
Craig.
Craig. Okay, good.
I enjoyed your teaching. As a former Christian coming to this, it's really interesting how you bring it to a light where we have to actually do something before we just believe in Jesus as our Savior, and we don't have to do anything. We're just in, right? But one thing you did say was, during the whole teaching I really enjoyed, was what we do is like filthy rags. As what we, and I remember that my dad taught me that in this whole time in the teaching. What does that really mean in our way? What is the filthy rags? What does that mean? I don't understand that.
Okay, so the verse that uses that is trying to say, look, if you're doing things just on your own strength and what you think is right, it's like filthy rags. Actually, the phrase is more like menstrual rags. Okay, so really we're talking about some things that if we would picture that would be pretty, you know, unclean, right? Pretty gross that way. So that's the way we should look at our efforts to be right. But when we're doing his stuff, then it looks right. Then it's received right. So the battle that goes on often in the scriptures, our thoughts on what's right versus his thoughts on what's right. Okay? Good. Because people use that as an argument against works, period. They'll say, well, what are you doing works for? Your works are just like filthy rags. Well, you know, in the right context, we'd understand that that's not exactly the way it's talking about it. Okay, Melissa.
First of all, I want to say thank you because you are the kind of teacher I need, and I praise y'all. My husband used to get real mad because I'd say, I don't like a fuzzy wuzzy God, you know, and he'd say, I hate when you say that. I say, I hate fuzzy wuzzy teachers because I don't need them. So, you know, I need somebody that just tells us like you do, that shoots straight. That's how I understand. But when you were talking, what came to me was foundations. And when I was during Hurricane Ike, my cousin, her house was destroyed. So they came like 8 o'clock at night. The house was there, and I went back at 10 o'clock the next morning, and the house was gone, and the foundation was clean, just dirt. And I've always thought that that's how he needs to tear us down, our foundation, from everything. And I've lost like over 50 people, and so I was really in deep grief. And this week, every time I touched something that belonged to them, it would just break, like he was trying to break that grief off of me. But I was wondering if you could tell me about a foundation. And we get on the rock by, as we take the steps that we're given when he pops our bubbles and we start walking and listen to the teachings, and then we're building a foundation on him, that we're on the rock as that goes. How does that go, you know?
Yeah, I mean, look, the walk that he's talking about, being walking worthily, the thought process and the belief system is the foundation. I believe I'm supposed to keep Shabbat, which means I have to now be aware of it every week. I believe I need to eat a certain way, so when I go to the store, I have to look at labels and I have to make sure that that's right, right? I believe, and just keep filling in all the different things that he expects from us. Now, those things were not the foundation that you walked in before. You might have been raised at least thinking in some hopefully good ways on how to treat people respectfully, you know, not hurt them and things like that. I mean, because humanity in general, not the majority, all of it, but the majority of it does try to cause no harm as best it can and to respect people's individual space and that kind of stuff. So that's a certain level of foundation, but that foundation says, look, anything goes as long as it's not hurting anybody. What's the difference? But he says, no, I expect you to do certain things even though that doesn't affect anybody else but you. But so I'm gonna build you a whole new foundation that's based on you believing that I am, right, he is, and that he cares about what we do. He gives you the freedom to choose to do it or not, but he cares about what you do. And then he gives us things that he wants us to do or not do. And so the foundation starts off with believing that he exists and that he has a desire that we're seeking to understand so that we can walk it out.
So when do we know that we're on the rock? I mean, that, you know, we are the rock because we're supposed to be like him.
Well, no, but the rock is that the foundation we're building on is that Yeshua is Messiah, the Father is the Father, and that they actually have provided us with what they want us to do. They give us this. And so that's the foundation. Now, your foundation could have cracks in it if you haven't really understood this and embraced it properly, but you have a foundation. You know, this is the foundation I'm building on. Mm-hmm. Okay?
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. You know, I was going to say something earlier today, and I didn't, and I don't want to come across as attacking anybody that's not here, okay? Because I know sometimes this time of year people do travel and they do get under the weather and that kind of thing. But I do remember listening to, I was listening to somebody talk about the congregation they go to, whatever, that, you know, was fairly lightly attended today, you know, because people were tired, you know, because it was Thanksgiving and all this other. Okay, look, Shabbat needs to be, I know what it was. I asked my mother how services went when she went with my kids today, right? And she said, well, you know, it was a very small group because, you know, people were tired. You need to hear from me that that's irrelevant to going to Shabbat. Okay, Shabbat is not something you do unless you feel tired, or something you do unless, you know, whatever. It's something that you do and you guard and you remember. Years ago, I had one person, and I said, is your wife okay? Because she wasn't there. I said, is she homesick? He says, no, she's Shabbating at home. I said, I didn't know that was an option. Now, I know a lot of you watching, you're Shabbating at home because you don't have a place to go, but I'm saying, but if you had this to go to, you would be expected to go. And so I know we're a little light today, but I know because a lot of people traveled because you guys all moved here to be here, which means your families are not here. So a lot of people went to go visit their families for Thanksgiving. I get that. But just as we're getting through the winter and all that, I really want you to know that I don't think he cares if you're tired. You should have been prioritizing being ready for Shabbat. I don't think he cares if this, that, and the other thing. If you're sick, stay home. You shouldn't come here if you're ill, right? But if you're not, you should be, you know, here. And if you're watching the stream, you should be watching the stream. You should be attending and blocking out that time and protecting that time. Okay? Well, I could watch it later. No, you should be watching it live if you can. Yes, you can hit pause and then run to the restroom or go get something to eat or whatever, but you should be doing something that shows you're observing and guarding and keeping Shabbat. Okay? Because if your foundation is, I believe that I need to do what he said, well, what he said was you need to guard and remember Shabbat. Right? Between the two sets of Ten Commandments, one says remember, the other says guard. Okay? So you need to do both. And I watch people very weak in that. And by the way, there's no difference then in what he says about the feasts. And yet I watch people very weak in their feast keeping. And there's no difference between that and the tithing. I watch that. Or weak in their kashrut, and I watch that. Or weak in, just keep filling in the blanks. People are weak in various areas because they're not making what he says high enough in priority. It should be the highest priority. You exist for that, not that is something that happens while you're existing. It's a shifting of the way we're looking at it. Because I don't know, you know, because I have people all the time saying, well, you know, we were just tired, so we slept in and watched the stream. If you live here, that's a terrible excuse. I don't accept it. I don't accept it. I don't care how tired I am. I come and I do this job every week. Okay? By the way, and that's after doing a Zone 3 on a Friday night, also doing Erev Shabbat on a Friday night, also doing a Torah study on a Friday night, and I'm still here on Saturday, then doing a Zone 2 in the morning, and whatever. I mean, I still come anyway. So where's the problem? Think about when we're doing the zones. Friday night, I will have already done Erev Shabbat and Torah study, then got up early to do Zone 2, then do services in Zone 1. And then counsel until midnight after that. Please stop telling me you're tired. Get more rest. Cut back on some other thing that you're doing that you could cut back on. Why are you not protecting Shabbat? Or other things of Yah? Where's the priority? That he's watching you. Okay? Big brother is watching you. Your big brother Yeshua is watching you. And he's looking down going, well, I guess I wasn't as important as I thought it was to that person because they're doing whatever they're doing instead of doing what I told them to do. Okay? How do you demonstrate your priorities? That's why I tell you about being Shabbat-centric or Chag-centric for the feasts. You should never have any of these things sneak up on you. You should be already planning for them in advance and preparing for them and emotionally, spiritually, mentally, etc., getting ready for them and excited about them, and nothing should get in the way. But do you do that? And that's really where the problem comes in. Again, I'm not judging. So you know what's going to happen? The few people that are out today that had legitimate reasons, they're the ones that are going to be all upset. And they're going to come and apologize to me. No, examine yourself. If you're legitimately home, be at peace, please. Okay? But not everybody is legitimately home, and you should own that and fix it. You don't have to come and apologize to me. Just show up next time properly. And if you're tired, then figure out a way not to be tired. It's Shabbat. Sundown is like 5 o'clock almost at this point. 5:30, 5 o'clock. How do you not have enough time to get some rest to be here by 1 o'clock in the afternoon? How much sleep do you need? I went to bed last night around midnight and still got 9 hours of sleep, which is a lot for me. I normally get about 6. But it's Shabbat, and I got to sleep in. And I still had many hours before getting here for services. I got up at like 9 in the morning. Service is at 1. How much time do you need on Shabbat? That you couldn't catch up and get some rest Friday night so you could be here? And I did the Torah study. So I didn't leave here till almost 11. Got home, wound down a little bit, went to bed. Fully energized, not tired. So I think a lot of it is just lame excuses, okay? Because we're not prioritizing the things of Yah enough. Now, some of you are thinking I'm being mean. I'm sorry. I'm not sorry I'm saying it. I'm just sorry you think it's mean, okay? Because you're not getting the point, okay? And he's trying to get your attention. He's just using me to do it. So own it if it's you, all right? All right, Marlene.
So I was, I thought this is what I heard you say, something similar to this. So, well, we know initially Yahweh disturbs our peace, which makes us start looking for the truth. And then today you were saying that he's like pushing our buttons to try to get us to move forward. And he keeps doing it as long as we keep moving forward. But if we stop responding, then he can, and we give up, he leaves us alone. So was that kind of what you were saying?
Yes.
So then if we keep having our peace disturbed and our buttons pushed, then we're moving forward, and then we should repent when we get the buttons pushed or whatever, and figure out what is the thing that's why what in us is the problem why we have a button, and then after we disengage, get the button disengaged, he's going to help us disable the button. Then we'll have another button that gets pushed eventually that we'll have to disassemble.
Yep.
And then just keep moving forward like that. So then it's a good thing if we're getting buttons pushed.
Yes.
And our peace is being disturbed. Yes. So hallelujah. Okay, yeah. So I'm looking forward to more and more disturbance of peace. Glory to Yahweh.
Look, the point, one of the pieces of the puzzle that I want to make sure is clear, and I had this experience in a sort of, we'll use a fairly, you know, social human example. You know, I used to work as a DJ back in the 80s, like everybody did in the 80s. And so I did a lot of gigs on Saturday night after sundown. And so my friends who were Torah observant and, you know, Sabbath keepers would want invite me to go out with them Saturday night after sundown and everything. And I almost always had to say no because I was working. Guess what happened eventually? They stopped asking because I kept saying no. So they just figured what was the point. So at some point, I think Abba does that with you as well. If he keeps poking and you don't respond, eventually he just stops. You should be very nervous if he keeps poking the same thing, that if you don't respond to it, at some point he's going to stop poking. It's not because it went away. He's basically said you're not interested. He's poking and he's wasting his time. Okay? So you need to respond to when he pokes you. Because then I started getting disappointed because there was some times when I wasn't working and they wouldn't invite me. I'd find out they all went out. And he said, well, we just assumed you were working. So I was going to be like, I just assumed you could ignore me again because you ignored me the last 50 times I poked you. So what are we teaching him about ourselves when we ignore him? Well, we're showing that we really don't have any interest in doing it. So the thing that Marlene said only works if you don't take too long in responding. He's going to keep poking you about something. As long as you're making some response and making some effort, he'll probably keep poking you. But if you ignore it and just kind of push it aside and try to excuse it in some way, at some point he's just going to say, you're not ready, you're not interested, so why would I waste my time with you? And that was your choice, not his. Now, of course, you can wake back up and then show that you actually are sorry and get it, and then he'll come back to poking you again. So he's not writing you off like forever, but he'll certainly leave you alone. Look, he did that to Israel. You don't want to listen to me? Fine, I'm dispersing you. Go do whatever you want. I'm sending you to the four corners of the earth, send you to every nation in the earth, sift you like seed through a sifter. I'm going to sift everywhere you're going to. Do what you want. And then one day when you realize that doesn't work, then give me a call. That's basically what he said, right? So I don't want you to think that if he's not poking you anymore, that he's given up on you. He's just waiting for you to actually show an interest. And you might not. That's the scary part. And if you don't, then you're done. But he's not going to keep poking you forever. He's not forcing anything. He's wanting to only work with those who want to work with him. If you don't want to work with him, what's he going to work with you for? Okay? I can give you an example. When I was in, over the years, many different multi-level marketings back in the day when that was a big deal, back in the 80s, 90s, etc., I could talk almost anybody into trying it, whatever I was doing. I could get them excited. Basically, we called it pumping them up. I could blow in and pump them up, right? But if I wasn't around, they would deflate and not do anything. In other words, they were not actually interested. And I had to learn that I was wasting their time and mine just because I could get them excited about something, but they weren't actually excited about it. So Abba's not going to sit there and try to keep pushing you towards something that you don't really want. He's going to poke you to see if you want it. He's creating an opportunity for you to be aware that there's a whole nother world you didn't know existed. Or actually, the real world existed, you didn't know it really was the real world. But if you don't want to respond to it, he's not going to sit there and keep pumping you up all the time. He's not going to do that forever. Why would he give you an immortal body just so he has to keep you pumped all the time so he can have you doing whatever, in submission to him and trusting you and everything else? You have your part, which is to demonstrate you want this. You're excited about this, all right? And the reason I never got anywhere in some of those multi-levels is because I never found another person like me that wanted it. Okay, and so I'd end up quitting at some point because I was frustrated always having to keep everybody all pumped up. So I gave up on those businesses. It would have worked fine had I found at least a few that, like me, really just wanted to put the work in without needing somebody to constantly call them up every day. Did you do this? Did you do this? Did you do this? Who wants that kind of a job? Well, Abba doesn't want to have to be on you every day to try to get you excited. He's going to be on you to keep growing if you want him to grow. He's going to keep giving you those opportunities. But he's not going to generate in you the desire. Either you want this or you don't. And you demonstrate that by your choices. How badly do you want what he's offering? I mean, it's simply an offer. You can live this life any way you want and die. You have that right and that freedom to do. Or you can live this way, you can live this life his way and live. That's basically what he's offering. But do you really want it? Because up here you want it because you think, well, I don't want to die and everything. I'd like to live forever. But do you want it? Are you willing to pay the price for it? Because he doesn't want just somebody who wants to live forever. He wants you to want to live forever in submission to him, trusting him. That needs to be demonstrated. Are you willing to do that? Are you that interested? Are you willing to get you out of the way and let him rule in your life? A lot of people are not. They think, they with their lip service, they say they are, but they're not. And it's demonstrated by him watching you not listen. I really loved, and I heard it, Wayne, when your wife came up in during praise time, I really appreciated when Catherine came up during the prayer and praise and said, when we went to Rabbi, we didn't even realize how much our budget was bleeding, and it was bad. And I've told that story. And I'm so excited to hear that you guys not only cleaned that up, but you have your first house. That's incredible. But you know what? They took some pretty strong words from me when I first looked at it. I said, look, you've got to do this, this, and this, and you're going to have to really, do a bunch of things different than you've been doing it. But they listened. And look at the fruit that they got out of it. Okay? And they were upside down budget-wise pretty bad. Okay? Worse than some of you that I know could fix yours, but you won't. And yet they took what I gave them to do and they did it. And now they're out of debt and they got a house. Amazing. I mean, okay, I'm very proud of you. Okay? And that's the way I think the Father is. I mean, I take credit for giving them tools. But I couldn't make them do it. I give lots of people tools. The Father gives everybody that he pokes all of the opportunities, But how many of them actually make use of it? And so I get real excited, as I'm sure the Father does too, that if I gave somebody tools and they used them and bore the fruit, I get really excited about it. Guess what? I think he gets excited about us too when he gives us and we take it and we use it. And he's like, yeah, I'm proud of you. Oh, good. That's where you get the well done, good and trustworthy servant. He says, well done. You're starting to get it. You're doing what you're supposed to do. You're listening to the anointed appointed who I put there to counsel you and guide you, and you're getting the results you're supposed to get. And some of you will hear Catherine get up here, say what she said, and you're still not going to come and get the guidance you need. Or you've already come and you're not doing what we tell you because you don't believe it's going to work. It worked for them. And for some of you, their situation was worse than whatever you're in because it was pretty bad. But they listened. They took it to heart and they made a commitment. We're going to fix this. Okay? And they worked hard at it. It didn't just happen because they were like, okay. I mean, they had to work hard over a few years. Because this goes back at least 5 years or so, right? Something like that. Because we weren't even in this building at the time. Okay? So this goes back a little while. And did that inspire any of you? It should. Just like reading this stuff should inspire you, right? Seeing the stories and the accounts and the people doing what they're supposed to be doing and seeing what happens. Okay? All right. Mr. Ken.
My question is going to be kind of woven in part of basically what you just got through talking about, and also the way you were answering Michelle's question. But I've got a little bit confused of what Shaul was trying to say, and the way that you were putting so much meat into each one of these verses. I found myself having to grasp and try to come back to some sense. So I've got to clear this up just so that I'm all right for the rest of the teaching. But verse 10 kind of is the key to the beginning of my question. So just to verse 10, to walk worthily of the master, and that would be our master Yeshua. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Pleasing and bearing fruit in every good work, increasing in the knowledge of Elohim, and that would be the Father, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So that's my premise, that's what I've been going on. And then even then in verse 12, giving thanks to the Father, which also points that out, that made us fit to share in the inheritance of the set apart ones in the light. So that kind of leads to our understanding of Revelation and what our goal is, and having knowledge of Elohim the Father and the end times. You sort of brought some of that up. But here's where I got confused. As we were finishing up, sort of beginning in 16, because in him were created all that are in heavens and all on earth, invisible and visible, in the thrones, in the principalities, and there at the very end, explain what he meant by this. All have been created through him and for him. So would that be through him, Yeshua, Yahweh, Yeshua, for him, the Father? Are we talking about
No. All things exist because they're going to be put under Yeshua's feet. The Father created all this stuff that we have, all right? This physical world, this realm, whatever. Because remember, the Father's outside of this time and space thing that we live in. He created all of this for his Son. But he created it through his Son. So he's the creator of all of these things. But all of it is for him.
For him,
yeah.
The Son.
Because remember, it continues, it says, and he is before all, and in him all hold together. He is the head of the body. So yeah, it's still talking about the Son.
That's what I thought. Maybe they were both being referenced here, because I know the head of the body would be the Son.
We don't know what else may exist in some other way anywhere else. We just know that the physical world that we understand, the physical universe we understand, was all made for his Son.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
And so again, we have such a limited understanding of all possibilities that are out there.
It's always greater than the Son.
Right. Okay, so again, it goes back to the story I tell that I think happened at the beginning of this existence, was that the Son came to the Father and said, hey, I'd like to create something. Mm-hmm. And so there wasn't anything at that point that we understand today as the physical universe. And that physical universe was created for him. And in it, he wanted us also for him. Okay? And so...
to become sons of Elohim.
Are there other types of existence out there? We only know about the physical universe was brought into existence for this. Okay?
Okay. That Good. Works. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, Pete?
So, Rabbi, I wanted to go back to verse 9, where he says, from the day we heard, we have not ceased praying for you and asking that you be filled with the knowledge of his desire and all wisdom and spiritual understanding.
Right.
When I saw knowledge, wisdom, and understanding, I thought of Proverbs 9:10,
right,
where it says, the fear of Yahweh is the beginning of wisdom and the knowledge of the set-apart one is understanding.
Yes.
That's foundational. And so I'm wondering if Shaul put that, all three of those words together there as part of the foundation, that the fear of Yahweh then gets your alignment correct so that when you are walking worthily of the Master. You've established who you're supposed to be walking worthily for. That without that proper alignment, without that proper fear of Yahweh, you're walking for a different master.
Right. Look, I think absolutely it would be pointing there. And I think it also points to Deuteronomy 10:12, which shows the fear of Yahweh, then the next step leads to walking in all his ways, which again would be back to walking worthily the master. So it all starts, and that's why I think he then goes in the later verses, like into 14 and 15, 16, etc., to remind us who it is that we're supposed to have that fear. Listen to the fear of Yahweh teachings, so all of you who've never listened to it, okay? It's not fear like, you know, trembling, afraid. It's this incredible level of awe, reverence, and respect. And because of that, we do what he says. And then we do the walking. So yes, I think he may be connecting Proverbs as well as Deuteronomy with that. Okay? Absolutely. Because the same order of events is still happening. It's that sort of knowledge, wisdom, and understanding then leading to walking. So if the fear of Yahweh, it says first fear Yahweh, then walk in all his ways. Well, if the fear of Yahweh is the beginning of knowledge, understanding, and wisdom, okay, well then, and I know that verse you read doesn't say it exactly that way, but other places say it's the beginning of understanding, it's the beginning of wisdom. So we know that it's the beginning. It's got to start with the way we see him, okay? All right, so I was looking over there at Pete. All right.
So I kept hearing you talk about choice and freedom, the whole teaching, and I hear that a lot. And I had a thought process that I just wanted to share. So I wasn't in the Christian church for very long, but what I do remember is that the biggest issue that I had with it was that they kept telling me that, oh, you can't help but to sin. You're going to sin all the time, no matter what. And I always thought, that's not what Scripture tells us. And I always felt like, oh, I can not sin, but how do I not sin? And through your teachings, it's definitely showed me how I can, you know, what not sinning looks like and what righteousness looks like.
You certainly can't avoid sin if you know what is actually the definition of sin, right? Which is why we did the teaching, what is sin? I mean, that's really, you know, the first step in it. I mean, how do you say, well, you know, I can certainly walk in life and not sin. Well, yeah, but you can't unless you know what sin is. Otherwise,
exactly.
How would you know how to avoid doing that, right?
Yes, exactly. And that's what I got from that. And I also thought if we can't help but to sin, or like you said at one point, we don't sin anymore or anything like that. I feel like that's a free will issue. We no longer have free will at that point to obey or not obey.
Let's use alcoholism as an example. You know, if somebody's an alcoholic, they can choose not to have a drink, but they will always have in them the potential to go ahead and get in that kind of trouble again. That's what sin is like. We are all sinners, just like, so it's not something you're going to just get rid of so that it's not sitting there waiting to, you know, expose its ugly head, so to speak. It wouldn't take much for you to sin again once you've stopped sinning and you figured out what sin is and you learned how to avoid it. So you have to realize that you're always going to be like a recovering alcoholic. You're going to be a recovering sinner. It's always going to be just lurking around that you have to be vigilant and diligent to keep it at bay, okay? Because it will never go away, just like people are told when they go to AA and other things. They say, this is not going to go away, but you're going to learn how to manage it and control it so that it no longer is a problem, but it won't go away, you know? And that's the same thing with anything addictive. And sin is basically an addictive behavior. It's an aberrant behavior, but it's an addictive behavior. And it does, so it doesn't go away potentially, like where you don't desire to do some of those things anymore, but you have to have that kind of awareness.
Oh, the want to not sin anymore.
Right.
Thank you.
So they continuously are making those choices to choose not to do it. All right, thank you, Megan. All right, and I forgot your first name.
I am John.
John.
Yeah, Yeshua has a line somewhere, Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. How do you reconcile that with what you were saying a few minutes earlier about we kind of exist for the Sabbath?
No, I didn't say we exist for the Sabbath. We exist to be obedient to what the Father said, trusting that what he said is for our benefit. So the Sabbath does exist. He created it for us. We need it. And I say that in our opening prayer every week. Yeah. Is that he knew that we needed that time. So the Sabbath does exist for us because we need it. However, we don't get to decide how it should look and what to do with it. He decides that.
Okay.
Thanks. Good. It's a good question because that does come out. Christianity uses that verse basically to say that we can do whatever we want and decide what to do with the Sabbath. No. He made the Sabbath for us because we need it. Now, of course, if you're coming from a Christian mindset where you think that the Sabbath is this pain in the butt, inconvenient thing that takes away a whole day out of your week, well, then you're not going to see that. But if you're someone who keeps the Sabbath, you realize, I am so thankful this thing exists. I mean, this day keeps me sane. Having that time separated from everything else is something that we need. And so I say this every week when we start, and I say, you know, after we sing and all that kind of praise, I said, you know, Father, we really are thankful and appreciative that you, at the beginning of all things, knew that we would need this time. That we would need a time to separate ourselves from all of the cares and concerns of everyday life and to focus and restore and refresh our thoughts towards you so we can get that rest and refreshment and restoration from all of the stress and distractions of life. To understand that that's meant to distract us, but we're supposed to be focused this way, right? So we have one day to put a pause on all the craziness and focus on life, all right? All right, live stream.
Hey, Janet Hoffman, when you said weak people will not make it in the kingdom, we are responsible for becoming fit and stronger through counseling with rabbi, coaching, or therapy as we go through trials. It's a question.
Okay, let me read this on. Okay, let's see. All right. We are responsible for becoming fit and stronger through counseling with rabbi, coaching, or therapy as we go through the trials. Yes. Okay. Abba provides you with tools and experiences to strengthen you. Tools and experiences. Okay. So experiences, meaning that when you get through it, if you don't sit there and ignore it and just whine about it, but you actually work your way through it, it will grow you and strengthen you. Okay, the experience itself of going through a challenge and then making it through strengthens you. Then, of course, with counseling and coaching and potentially therapy, whatever you need, you also can address the weak areas of your life and figure out how to unravel triggers, traumas, and other things that are potential weak spots that make you susceptible to making some bad choices. Okay? All right. Next.
All right, from Holly Dahl. A question, when Yah tests our hearts and kidneys, is the kidneys in regard to our adrenaline, knee-jerk emotions and actions during tests and trials? And if so, how do we humble our adrenaline-driven reactions toward pleasing Yah.
Okay. So it says that Yah tests our hearts. It also says he tries our kidneys. And it's an idiomatic phrase for he gets down to what's really driving you. So, yes, I think it's an, a certain amount of it is the emotional side of it. I'm not going to say that it's necessarily our adrenaline knee-jerk action, but, you know, he's testing. You know how, like, we use a phrase, and these, again, these are these idiomatic phrases, like, you know, having a gut reaction, or I trust my gut, or, you know, people tell you, hey, trust your gut. That's what are you really feeling deep down? So when Yahweh says he tries us and tests us in terms of the kidneys, he's trying to point out, I'm really trying to make sure to find out what do you really feel? What do you really want? What's going on deep inside? And so that's more what he's talking about when he says, you know, Yahweh tries the kidneys or tests us in that way. He says, he's not just going to test the surface of what you claim and say and whatever, but how do you really feel? What do you really want? All right, next.
From Diane Hogue, Shabbat Shalom, Rabbi. How do we align our heart, head and heart?
Okay, so, okay, you have to first understand the right order of things, okay? It has to be where you're working on your head first. The head is where the thoughts are. The heads are then also hopefully where the rational reasoning is. And if you are taking thoughts into captivity, all right, in other words, we have all kinds of thoughts. Some of them are our own, some of them are other people's, and we hear them, and then we ponder on whether or not we agree with them or not. So information is coming into our heads. So let's call thoughts simply information. And so you have to decide what to do with that information. Now, if you have that information where you're dwelling on it or you're accepting it, over time, depending on how repetitively you have that information come to your awareness, you will attach an emotion to it. Now, if you are not choosing that and it's just happening by default, then you don't necessarily have your heart and your head aligned because the heart's going to just be driving. So the proper alignment is that the head is driving, not the heart. The emotions are hopefully proper manifestations of a rational reasoning thought process to do or not do or to like or not like or whatever. Okay, so the emotions are hopefully in line with, because if you use the word alignment, that's actually a real good word for that. There's a vertical alignment. The head has to be above the heart. But you need to understand, though, is the emotions are way stronger than thoughts. So once an emotion has been attached to a thought, new thoughts are not going to do well running up against that thought, because that thought now has an emotion behind it. Okay. And so it has to start with, you must have enough awareness. I tell people they need to have hypervigilant awareness of their own self. So you have to be aware of what's going on in your own head. Information's coming at you all the time. People around you are doing things. You got digital devices on with things that are playing, whatever. So you got all this information always coming at you. You must be very diligent about what you do with the information. Do you discard it? Do you allow it to be something that gets an emotion attached to it? Something, you have some information comes in, it makes you happy. You have some other information, it makes you angry. Or I should say you choose to respond with anger or happiness. But are you actually choosing? Or have you just been, you've trained yourself to respond in a certain way, okay? By doing it repetitively. All right? And that's where we get these irrational things like maybe one day when you were two, some dog barked at you, snapped at you, maybe bit you, and now you're afraid of all dogs. When the reality is that the odds of another dog biting you are very slim. Matter of fact, the odds of any dog you run into in your life, especially in someone's house, biting you is very slim. Like zero almost, right? But you're going to respond with fear because the emotion grabbed a hold of that thought that dogs attack and bite. And so you now can't rationally argue with that because the emotion is making that impossible. Okay? And this is the same thing we do spiritually. It's so hard sometimes to receive new doctrinal understanding that's actually not new, but it's correct, compared to what you were told all your life as a Christian or whatever you were believing. So then it's swimming upstream against the emotion you used to have attached to whatever the idea was that they had taught you and sold you. So now you got to adjust that. It's very hard for a new thought to win a battle against an old one that's got a lot of emotion behind it. Really tough. Really tough, okay? And so you have to be really careful with that. Look, let me talk to you husbands and wives, okay? So at some point in the beginning of your relationship, you had thoughts of, I like him, I like her. And then there was probably a lot more detail to that, like, I like the way she talks, or the way he talks, or the way he does this, or the way she does that, or whatever. So there's things that you liked. And then you would see them and talk to them, and you felt great, right? And you wanted more of that. You wanted to spend more time with them and more time with them. Then at some point, things didn't go so well in your relationship. And over a period of time, there was new thoughts. I can't stand him. I can't stand her. She irritates the snot out of me, blah, blah, blah. Now it's hard to remember the other thought that used to be there. Same person, but it's hard to get back to that place because the new thought with the new emotion is really stronger. Now, initially, it probably wasn't. Something happened, you were a little upset, but you still loved them and everything was still great. But if that thing keeps happening enough, it becomes the new dominant, emotionally driven thing. And now you can't even remember how you started. It's like, I don't even know why I married you. Well, because you had this other feeling and thoughts back then. That's why you married me. But now this is going on, and that's become the dominant focus of your emotion and your thoughts. And it's hard to remember, wait a minute, but I love you. I wanted to spend my life with you. And now I can't wait to get out of the house. And so what's really changed? The way we've dealt with or not dealt with things that are happening, which means you probably need counseling and other things to help you deal with them. But if you allow the emotional connection to a thought of the irritation that the person, whatever, then it becomes the dominant thing. And then when you see them, you start feeling those feelings instead of the first feelings, which are the good feelings. You know. And so we then connect things. I'm trying to think how far to go with all this stuff. I'll give you something else. Whatever is happening in your life, okay, where you have a very strong emotion, like really strong emotion, anything consistently happening or uniquely happening will get linked. What do I mean? Anybody have a song that when you hear it, it puts you in a certain place? Okay. Man, there's certain music that plays, and my wife always says, I'm right back in college playing volleyball or whatever. Because that song, they seem to play all the time when the volleyball team was playing. So it's like certain songs can take you back to a relationship or take you back. Certain smells take you right back to mom's kitchen or take you back to some restaurant. Whatever, smells, sounds, anything like that, when you're in a strong emotional place, positive or negative. But you got to be careful because you will link without effort. You didn't link that smell to that place. It linked itself, right? Or that music or that song. These things link themselves. So you come home angry and you see your spouse's face. And you come home angry and you see your spouse's face. Then seeing your spouse's face is going to make you angry at some point, even though your spouse didn't do anything to you. Do you understand? I mean, we actually link things without consciously doing it. Which is why you have to make sure that you're in a proper mindset and emotional state when you see those you love, so that we're connecting things correctly, right? Because if you're angry and you start interacting with your children will start to think that they're the cause of the anger, even though you were angry about something else, you know? And they'll start blaming themselves for something that had nothing to do with them. You were already angry. It had nothing to do with them, but then you start snapping at them because you're already snapping at everybody. So let's be careful how this works. The vertical alignment has got to be, you have to be aware of your thoughts and be even more aware of what you do with them. Because if you allow it to be something you meditate on, dwell on, and think about, an emotion will attach. Once an emotion attaches, then eventually action comes out of the emotion. And so that's where we end up with a problem, okay? Okay, it's like I use the example. A guy's driving down the road, and he sees a pretty woman on the side of the street, and he notices her, because he's a guy, he notices her. That's a thought. Then he goes, I'm married, I don't need to be looking over there, and he keeps driving. He took the thought into captivity. A thought he couldn't control, it's just a thought that first came, he said, I noticed a pretty woman. Now, what if he thought, she's a pretty woman, he's really thinking about it, and he decides to drive around the block and see if she's still there and see her again, and now he's getting some emotions attached to it. Now this guy's kind of start to have a problem because he didn't take the thought into captivity. Nothing wrong with the thought. It's natural. A woman or a man is going to see somebody they think is attractive. They're going to notice, oh, that's an attractive person. But what do you do with that? Okay? Just like something could be going on that's irritating, you could decide to be irritated or not. Anything that you're aware of is simply an awareness and a thought. But what do you do with it? And then what you do with it is whether you're going to handle it well or not is that based on that choice. And so, you know, the emotion, anger, joy, lust, desire, preference, whatever preference is, I want, I don't want, ultimately, right? Married man sees a pretty woman and decides, I want. Now we got a problem. He didn't just notice that she's pretty. Now he decided, I want. That's the emotion, I want. The thought has an emotional expression. Pretty, I want. Okay, now you're going to get yourself in all kinds of trouble because you're a married man. You can't do that. So you have to be understanding that the thought alignment has to come before the emotion, the heart. They have to be aligned properly. So you must start by controlling your thinking. Thoughts that should not be held on to need to be taken into captivity, discarded, whatever. All right? When I first met my wife, I actually didn't meet her. When I first saw her, she was walking at services for first day or last day of Unleavened Bread or something like that. And I didn't know who she was. I just noticed, pretty girl. I said, oh, that's a pretty woman right there. But she was walking with a little 3 or 4-year-old that looked just like her. I didn't know that was her niece. I thought, this is a married woman, that's her daughter. So I just didn't think about her again. Now later when I got to meet her, I kind of recognized her and I said, oh, wait a minute, so you were the one I saw, and oh, that's your niece. My brain just said, nope, which is what you should learn to do. I mean, I saw her and was like, oh, caught my interest. Saw the child, lost my interest. And it's not because I thought single mom. I just assumed she was married and that was, you know, I just didn't connect up any other thing. I just said, you know what? I don't need to be going that direction. So do you have the strength, though, to take thoughts into captivity? You know? Because I could have thought, I want, and then started finding all kinds of ways to not worry about the other details that could be, you know, inconvenient to what I want. And then I could have maybe gone and pursued potentially a married woman or whatever it was. I certainly could have done that. Because I want means everything else is just annoying interference. I can push that aside. Because I'm going to try to figure out how to get what I want. Because that's what we always do. We always try to figure out how to get what we want. So I got to be careful what thoughts I allow to turn into I want. Okay? Because that could really be problematic. All right, next. That was a long answer, but okay.
Janet Hoffman, Colossians 1, verses 11 and 12. All endurance and patience with joy, giving thanks to the Father. Is joy then connected to giving thanks? And can we expand on how to grow in our patience?
Okay, is joy then connected to giving thanks? I guess the answer would be yes. I mean, the main thing is let's understand. Okay, so you're going to endure. Is that any fun? Is there any joy in enduring generally? No. Is patience a joyful experience? No. All right? So he's trying to do is he's trying to say, look, in all endurance and patience, do that with joy. Find a way to have joy. And this goes back to James, you know, chapter 1, where he says, you know, count it joy in your trials. Right? How could a trial be a joyful thing? Okay, so when we think of joy or rejoicing, it's like a celebratory thing, right? It's like you're celebrating something. You have joy and you're celebrating, rejoicing, like, hey, you know, like team, your team wins or you accomplish something, right? And you sort of have that joy of accomplishment or winning or whatever. Well, understand that a trial or a situation needs endurance and patience. If you can get through it, you can have joy knowing that it's going to do what? It's going to strengthen you. It's going to build your character. You know, in James 1, let me just read it to you. Give me a second here. All right, so one more page. It says, my brothers, count it all joy when you find yourself in trials, knowing that the proving of your belief works endurance. So the trial helps to prove your belief, which helps develop endurance and strength and all these other things that we talked about, so you're not weak, but you're strong. So the giving thanks is a part of all of that, and that you're giving thanks for the opportunity to have the endurance developed and the patience developed and to strengthen through the experiences. So he says, all endurance and patience with joy, do that first, and then giving thanks to the Father for all of that. Okay? So then joy is connected to giving thanks when you are looking at it from the right perspective. Okay? So can we expand on how to grow in our patience? No, he'll give you plenty of things that, you know, you just have to look at it from the right perspective. Okay? When what's the situation why we have to be patient? Something is not happening at the speed you want it to. Is that essentially most things that you need to be patient with? Something is not happening at the speed you want it to. So then you have to win the battlefield of the head and the emotions by saying, okay, does it matter? Is this a chance for patience? Is there anything I can do to fix this, change it, or whatever? So learn from the experience. Like, I've learned that I'm not a big fan of lines. I don't like to stand in them and wait for things. So I will either stand very patiently in a line, recognizing there is no other choice, or I will get out of the line and do something else and come back and do something. So then I'm learning. So I have joy in that I've learned how to handle the situation. If I don't need to be there, then I just won't do it. If I do need to be there, I'm going to recognize there's nothing to do about this. I'm just going to sit here and not complain about it, but recognize that this is going to help me build my patience because I have to be here. It has to be done, which, of course, is one of the strengthenings that we need to have, which is recognizing some things you can't avoid and have to get done. And so you just have to get them done. Now, doing it with the right attitude is the highest level of getting it done. Doing it with the wrong attitude, you're still going to get it done, but you're not really accomplishing everything you could. You're getting the sort of the minimum value out of it, okay? You did get it done, but you missed all the growth you could have had. All right, next.
Daphne Neighbors, in verse 20, why is peace the word used for what he accomplished through his blood?
I love that all the locals who are online right now are the ones who are typing in all the questions. Oh, you guys are cute. Okay, in verse 20, why is peace the word used for what he accomplished through his blood? All right, so what kind of state does sin put us in? It makes us enemies, doesn't it? So we're in an enemy state. So when he did what he did in redemptive form, it then brings peace between us. It reconciles, right? So if you're ever at odds with somebody and you want to reconcile, that means that you have to come back to a state of where you now have peace with each other. So that's why. It's understanding the... Let me just see if I can find the verse I want to talk to you about it. All right, so... In verse 20, it says, and through him completely restored a favor all unto himself, whether on earth or in heaven, having made peace through the blood of his stake. Look at the next verse. And you, who once estranged and enemies in the mind by wicked works, but now you have been completely restored to favor. So there is no peace between enemies. But now you're not enemies anymore. Okay? So there is a peace that's been created there. All right, next.
From Lise, Colossians 1, verse 7, who is Epaphras? Also is against Torah, or break Torah by replacing Epaphras' name with Rabbi Steve's name as I follow teaching.
Okay, so first, we don't know who that is. It's just somebody that was part of the congregation that, you know, Paul is calling a beloved fellow servant, okay, who's been there helping them to whatever degree, okay? So I don't know who that is. The study of, like, more of the history of things that are going on, everything else has never been what he's had me doing. It's really getting, how much out of this do you need and how to use it in your walk, right? So I'm not the most well-versed on all the names and people, and so there may be some significance to this person. I am not aware of it at the moment, okay? Because that's not what I study. Now, putting my name in there wouldn't certainly not be necessarily inappropriate if you understand and thinking about that people like me are people that are there to do what he's saying that this person was doing, okay? He says, as you also learned from Epaphras, our beloved fellow servant, who is a true servant of Messiah on your behalf, who also declared to us your love and spirit. In other words, this is a representative that Paul is endorsing as being a true servant of Messiah. So, I mean, certainly you could put anybody in that space who has that role in terms of looking at them in the same way, okay, if you want to look at somebody in that way. All right, next.
All right, Freddie G. is verse 15 referring to Yeshua as firstborn, like before Genesis, or firstborn in the new creation to come, like our transformation? Verse 16 seems to be the answer, but maybe it's both.
No, I would think it's both. I mean, you know, Hebraic reasoning and thought basically is cyclical. Okay, things happen, and then they have an ultimate manifestation of them happening, but they happen cyclically over and over to a certain degree. So I would say it's probably referring to both.
All right, Shaylee Mariano, when it says our sins have been forgiven, what sins are these? Is it the guilty charge that is removed from sometimes failing at Torah that gives us a chance to repent and try again?
All right, so we have two issues, right? One is when you first come in, you're coming in from a place that's called darkness and sin, etc., because you don't know better. And so his death covered all of that. Now, as you go forward, you're still going to make mistakes. You're still going to break the Torah, which is sin is lawlessness. Sin is breaking the Torah, breach of the commandments, okay? And so his death covers that as well, if you repent. Now, there's a difference in the covering slightly from the idea that he pops your bubble and lets you know that forgiveness has been made available to you. Like, you didn't actually have to do anything at this point. Then, in order to move forward, you have to accept that forgiveness by choosing then to walk in a different way. So there is a repentance there. You have to own that you deserve death, which you maybe didn't realize you did, and that you appreciate that he redemptively took that on himself. But you can't keep doing those things that required that in the first place. Okay, so you have a mindset. It's the only difference is in you. What he did doesn't change. Okay, so I'm walking through life. I'm in my 20s, have no idea that any of this exists, and all of a sudden I find out all this exists. This is what happened to me. So then I come to understand that I've been doing things that I shouldn't have been doing, didn't know I was a big deal or not, and then was very glad to find out that there's a redemption available to me, provided I choose to stop doing the things I shouldn't have been doing. And so then going forward, when I slip through repentance, that can be applied to the new issues that I've created, okay? As long as I keep making a commitment, like the first time, to stop doing the things I shouldn't have been doing and do the things I needed to be doing. And so that's the fullness of how it plays out. Next.
All right, from Olivia Durth, Shalom Rabbi, in the effort to de-Christianize my mind, the grace versus favor, I try to find Tanakh scriptures to support this. Does Isaiah 26, 10 through 11 go with what you said? And there's a second part to this.
Okay, hold on. Let me just... First of all, you just need to listen to the teaching, the search for the doctrine of grace. Okay, that should help you to answer all of that. But Isaiah 26, let's see. It says, the wrong finds favor, yet he shall not learn righteousness. In the land of the straightforwardness, he acts perversely and does not see the excellency of Yahweh. O Yahweh, your hand is high. They do not see. They see the ardor of the people and are ashamed. Also let the fire of your adversaries go. Okay. O Yahweh, you establish peace for us. I mean, there is some of that in here, but that's not what this is all about. Your struggle between grace and favor is that the church basically mangled the concept and sold it to you as unmerited favor, okay? They took mercy and turned it into this thing they're calling grace, and that's where the problem is. So the best answer to you is you go listen to the teaching called The Search for the Doctrine of Grace. I cover every verse where the word appears, okay? I cover every verse where the word appears so that you can see it, hopefully, the way it needs to be seen. All right, next, and we need to be wrapping it up.
All right, from Leon, looking at the two greatest commandments in the context of becoming a good and faithful servant, is it possible to fill the first without loving our neighbor in the body as ourselves?
I think that somehow we missed that the first is about loving our creator and the second is about loving our neighbor and each other. So I don't have it on my screen, so I don't know exactly what you said again, but the first great command is to love Yahweh, your Elohim, with all your heart, might, and being. And the second one is to love your neighbors yourself. And so the first one is about loving the above, and the second one is about loving the below, loving those down here, okay? Expressing his love for you and your love for him through the way you treat other people, all right? Anything else?
We'll throw one more out here if we can.
All right.
From Elizabeth, is that Lightkey? Rabbi, I'm struggling with when and how is appropriate to worship and appraise Yeshua without seeming to elevate him above Yahweh. Christianity turns him into an idol, so their music turns me off.
Okay, so look, it's how do I explain it? It's like if you're working at a business that's got multiple locations. The person who is the head of your particular location needs to be fully looked at with the proper authority that they have, yet there's a supervisor higher than them, okay, that they are responsible to. And so we're told that Yeshua did all that he did. We're told that he created all things. All things came to be by and through him. John 1 tells us that. We read that in Colossians, okay? But yet he's under the Father. In other words, think of the Father as the one who gave permission, authorized, empowered all that exists to be, and then allowed that Yeshua be the one that brings it all into existence. Because it was all done for him, okay? Probably the Father and the Son teaching would help you for that. Do you know the Father and the Son? Okay, but yes, Christianity makes it all about the Son, and that's where it really gets very confusing. Okay? Yeshua says very clearly, my Father is greater than I. Now, when I first said that, I don't know how many years ago, I said that as part of the teaching, I got people all mad at me, thought I was being, you know, all disrespectful and everything. I was like, I just read what he said. I don't know, how do you have them equal, all you Trinitarians, when he said, my Father is greater than I? They're not equal. He says they're not equal. Now, that doesn't make him any less everything that it says he is. His Father's just more than that, okay? Takes nothing away from him. He just simply says, you're impressed with me. My Father's greater than me. It shouldn't be that hard a concept to figure out, okay? He is everything that Paul tells us in Colossians, and John tells us in the Gospel of John when he's trying to describe, Yeshua speaking, right, trying to describe things, and John's describing things. You know, he says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with Elohim, Word was Elohim, and all things that came to be by and through him. Yet he says, my Father's greater than I. So as impressed as we are with him, Father's more impressive, okay? And he said, for all of you Christians out there, he said, I don't want you focused on me. I came here to point you to the Father. So don't be all, everything's about me. You know, Christianity's got, it's all about Jesus. Well, no, it's not. It's all about the Father. The Father says it's all about his Son. The Son says it's all about the Father. Okay? Because he did all of this for his Son, but his Son wants us all to focus on the Father. Okay, so it shouldn't be that complicated. And so we have a proper, hopefully proper, love, respect, awe, reverence, etc. for the Son, knowing that he wants us to direct more of that, or mainly direct that towards the Father. Okay? All right. That last one? All right, good. Hope that was good for everybody. Awesome.